Pantsless in Alara by Wonky Elk. Fandom, Stargate Atlantis. Relationship, Rodney McKay and John Shepherd. Rating, teens and up. Red by It Started With Alex. Cover art by Cassiope25. You look perfectly fine to me. Stunning, even. You walk in beauty, like the night. Rodney snorted and ran his hand over his newly shaved head for the millionth or so time, since he had decided to preempt nature's clear determination to rid him of all his hair by slow and painful degrees, and just get it the hell over with. Beauty was not a descriptor that sprang to mind. I looked like an oversized billiard ball balanced on a sack of potatoes. John shook his head indulgently, a head which was still unfairly covered with thick and luscious hair, no less attractive for the peppered through grey, and wrapped Rodney up in his arms and his still overwhelming affection. Trust me, Rodney, you look amazing. You always have, and you always will. Now, stop primping like a schoolgirl and finish getting dressed. John slapped Rodney lightly on his very naked ass. The Alarans might be pretty relaxed about a lot of things, but I'm fairly sure they're still in favour of the wearing of pants for important ceremonies. Rodney couldn't stop a smile blossoming all over his face, a smile that he immediately saw matched on John's, their minds clearly going to the same and very happy place. They hadn't always kept their pants on Alara. Rodney, the mission was supposed to start 15 minutes ago. The morning had started early and not well, like far too many mornings on Atlantis. There had been 7 flavours of crisis before Rodney had even made it to breakfast, and by that time there had only been toast left and some sort of scraped-over savoury topping that Rodney had decided not to inquire into too closely. He had never been fussy with regards to food, but ever since he had learned of the intimate involvement of the glands of a skunk-like creature in one of his favourite locally sourced stews, it had seemed like wisdom to avoid asking anything other than, "Does this contain citrus?" and leaving it firmly at that. Rodney blamed the paucity of his meal for the general mood of gloom that overcame him when they walked through the gate. That and the rain. Before coming to Atlantis, Rodney had not had any very strong thoughts about rain, beyond wet, cold avoid. Since then, he had been tormented by, and trapped in, many different types of rain, battering, raging, just this side of ice, slow and torturous, when you couldn't move even an inch from your hiding place without risking death, and were forced to endure drop after drop after drop, maliciously trying to wear you down. On top of which, Rodney had such bad associations with storms, and with the sort of heavy rainfall that sneakily opened the way for parasites to creep into your brain and attempt to systematically destroy it, that his default reaction to any kind of rain at all, even the lightest, most charming of showers, was to wish it heartily into the depths of a volcano, where it could battle it out with the molten lava and see who won in the game of evaporation versus solidification. John gave Rodney a look as they started their soggy journey, which suggested that he knew exactly what was passing through his mind. He gave Rodney's arm a slight squeeze, so swift that Rodney might almost have thought he dreamt it, before ordering them onwards. Rodney swallowed his automatic complaints in surprise at the gesture, and set himself to grimly stoic as he trudged onwards. It wouldn't last. Rodney estimated that his record time for silent suffering without actual illness was 5.2 minutes, but he felt that the attempt had to be made. And despite the rain and the cold and the squelching, sucking mud underfoot, Rodney was genuinely glad to be back here and doing this. They had all feared, when they took Atlantis to Earth, that they might have a long and painful wait to get back to Pegasus, months or even years of bureaucracy and argument. But in fact, the danger of exposure posed by a huge invisible city whistling casually in the ocean, all nothing to see here, carry on about your day, whilst liable to become suddenly visible or to otherwise malfunction at any moment, ensured that their marching orders were processed quickly and without fuss. They had returned with better supplies, starry-eyed new personnel, and as many game consoles, movies and stacks of death-defying junk food as everyone could smuggle on board, but without Jennifer Keller. Rodney had not had any notable success with relationships, but he had still been stunned by the speed with which a love that he had thought would last forever had been exposed as a catalogue of errors, which had led both of them to confuse a genuine friendship and mutual lust with something deeper. Even knowing that Rodney's heart was in Atlantis, Jennifer had leapt at the chance to stay on Earth and build the life that she had really wanted all along, a life in which the possibility of being shot at, drained to a husk, or turned into a wraith ship at any moment was not quite so high up on the likelihood scale. Rodney had been upset, saddened, guilty and annoyed by his own blindness to the truth, but he had never, even for a moment, contemplated staying. Which was when they both realised that this had never been going to work in the first place. They had parted with a hug and sincere good wishes, and Rodney found he didn't regret the experience, but he did miss having someone warm and loving and his, someone to turn to when he felt cold and alone. There was John, of course. John had always been there. But the idea of John slipping into his bed and wrapping his strong, comforting arms around Rodney was ludicrous. Wasn't it? Rodney, do you need a refresher on the mechanics of walking? Rodney looked up, startled, suddenly realising that his preoccupation had led him to stumble several times, and now stop with one leg poised foolishly in the air, frozen by a revelation that he very much hadn't expected to be having today. No? You know, I think you might need a brush up in repartee as well. Your usual standards are higher. Despite the teasing, there was an air of genuine concern about John, about all of them, which Rodney felt guilty about inducing. He immediately resorted to sharpness. Yes, well, I'm wet and I'm cold, and the ground is trying to steal my boots for who knows what nefarious purposes, so forgive me if I'm not at my razor-edged best right now. Taylor patted his arm soothingly. It is not much further to the settlement, Rodney, and I believe that we will be made very welcome there. The Alarans had been recommended by several of their allies as a strong and honourable people. Rodney had heard that sort of thing before and bore the resultant scars, but he was willing to grudgingly admit that the effort needed to be made. Atlantis should be working with the people of Pegasus, not in isolation or with a mere token nod towards coexistence, and this was another step towards that goal. It really hadn't been much further, but Rodney had well and truly blown straight past Stoic and deep into the bowels of full-throttle ranting by the time that they had arrived at warm, insulated huts and hot, spiced drinks and a welcome spread of food. By this time, Rodney didn't care how many stink glands or crispy-fried genitalia were involved in the feast. He was just happy to see it and to mark out large chunks of it for his own. "Will you allow us to send you some warm clothing while we dry yours? We do not wish our guests to sit in discomfort." Rodney looked over at John with pleading in his eyes, and he caught a look of amusement and... something. Strong affection, maybe? It was just for a brief moment before John's face took on its standard meet-and-greet expression of bland, innocuous charm as he graciously accepted the offer. Ronan and Taylor were shown to separate huts to change in, but for some reason John and Rodney were given one to share, and a strangely knowing wink from their impishly grinning escort as she left them to it, assuring them both with unnecessary emphasis that there was no need to rush, none at all. Not that Rodney was inclined to worry too much over what all that was supposed to mean. The hut was gloriously warm with a blazing fire, furs to snuggle into, a fresh set of clothing for each of them, simple and cosy looking, and more of that hot, spicy, chocolate-like drink they had been greeted with, and which was like a huge hug in a cup. A rather risque hug, Rodney thought, as he sipped gratefully at his mug, feeling the liquid tingle very pleasantly all through him. Or perhaps the tingling was less from the chocolate, and more from the way that John was flinging his clothes off with not the slightest inhibition, and exposing long, strong limbs honed and scarred from years of working to protect his team, his people, hell, anyone who needed protection. It was like an epiphany watching him and seeing every moment of courage and self-sacrifice in his skin, in the set of his shoulders, in those sure and easy movements which could turn in a split second from casually disrobing to defending them both from enemies without hesitation. Rodney would die for John, for his team, for a lot more people than he had ever conceived of himself willing to die for. But John? John would die for almost anybody, not because he didn't consider himself worth saving, but because he considered them more so, because he believed that people mattered. John was a natural, born protector, and, and Rodney was staring at his naked body whilst only half out of his own jacket, and maybe, just maybe, that might be considered as not quite your standard best friend-like behaviour. John had reached for a pair of clean pants before noticing, but then he paused and raised an eyebrow at Rodney, in a way which made him blush to his roots. Somewhere inside him, his liver and kidneys and every separate organ were turning a bright and unbecoming fuchsia pink. "You should probably get out of those wet things, Rodney."
Yes, I probably should.
And Rodney really would have been getting on with that whole undressing business, except that his limbs had completely stopped working, due, no doubt, to being waterlogged and cold, and for no other reason. And so he sat there for a moment with his rosy red insides and a certain growing desperation. "Would you like me to help?" Rodney wasn't sure if he had only imagined the faintest hint of a growl in that tone, and if his shiver was purely from the cold, but really he should just snap out of this immediately and get his own damn clothes off like a functioning adult.
"Yes, please?"
"Oh, well, thank you very much, Mouth." Rodney had been suspicious on many previous occasions as to whether his vocal apparatus was really on his side, and now he was inclining firmly towards a definite no. That was nothing but the basest treachery, and John was peeling Rodney out of his clothing in the gentlest, most tender fashion imaginable, except with a hint of suppressed amusement that prevented Rodney from feeling too much like he had slipped into a Harlequin novel, and it suddenly felt like something they should have been doing for years.
"I think I love you."
John had been mid-pants removal when Rodney's mouth had betrayed him again in a rushed and garbled blurt. He finished the job with a startled jerk that was anything but tender and left Rodney landing on his back on the bed with a loud and graceless whoomp.
"Ow!"
Rodney glared at John, his feelings of great and boundless love by no means vanished, but now intermingled with a more normal irritation. It was actually comforting, taking him from utterly overwhelmed to grounded and more able to cope.
"Ow!"
Rodney added, just to make his point. John looked down at him with an expression that had gone from shocked to joyful to wary in the space of nanoseconds.
"You love me?"
Rodney sat up and crossed his arms huffily, almost forgetting for a moment that they were both naked and in a secluded hut, and there were furs that practically begged to be rumpled and despoiled.
"Yes, I love you. Is that really so hard to believe? I mean, you're so, you know..."
Rodney had to release an arm in order to express himself fully.
"Lovable,"
he concluded triumphantly, and crossed his arms again with a smug feeling of checkmate. John blinked down at him and then sat on the bed. "Rodney, forgive me for taking a moment here, but we've known each other for 6 years, and you have never so much as hinted that you might find me lovable. Or at least not in the way that I am assuming you intend to be the naked kind of lovable, seeing as how we're both quite remarkably naked, and we really don't need to be." John indicated the clothes, which had been neatly set to one side, and which currently looked, to Rodney, not warm and clean and enticing, but confining and concealing, and probably itchy to boot.
"Well, I'm sorry if I wasn't fast enough for you. Sometimes it takes me a while to process all of the data."
6 years, Rodney. There was a lot of data. Rodney looked up at John, sitting close but not quite close enough, so that Rodney's skin seemed to be reaching out, aching and desperate to close that last millimetre between them. Or it could just be goosebumps.
"Maybe we should get under the furs."
For a moment, Rodney wondered if he had got this wrong, if that brief expression of joy had only existed in his imagination. But then John pulled back the furs on the bed and gestured Rodney to get in, quickly following after and tucking his own intensely warm body around Rodney's, so that almost no part of him was starved for contact. It was really only his lips that were missing out, which seemed a problem that shouldn't be beyond a genius to solve. Rodney wasted no time in applying his intellect to the situation and resolving it. Rodney would certainly never have ever read anything which contained the terms hot burning kisses or his firm manly thighs, so the fact that these terms sprang so familiarly to his mind must just have been an aberration, or the result of some sort of momentary mental crossover between himself and some alternate universe version who was less discerning in his literary choices.
After a while, though, Rodney wasn't thinking at all. They had slept for a short while before dressing with care, grimacing at the state of the furs and making an ineffectual attempt to remove the worst of the damage. But Rodney remembered the wink and the fact that they had been housed together in the first place, and he thought that they probably needn't get themselves too worried. They kissed, just once, and entangled hands for a brief moment, a promise that this wasn't over, was no momentary loss of sense and senses, but the start of something that was finally lasting and true. Though it wasn't the start, not really, but somewhere in the middle, because love didn't spring up just like that, unannounced, but had been waiting, patient and quiet and growing, at the back of the room for some time now, until it had finally gathered the confidence to show itself. The rest of their stay had been uneventful, except, of course, in that they had forged an alliance which would go on to be one of their greatest and most successful, and would be of enormous help to them in their eventual defeat of the Wraith, but all that seemed of lesser importance. The team had been allowed to keep their borrowed clothes as a gift, so that all pants had remained firmly on, until they had returned to Atlantis and gotten through all of the interminable activities that were necessary before Rodney and John could call it a night and find each other again, and could reaffirm their love both with and without the involvement of clothing. Ilara had remained one of their favourite places ever since. "Okay, fine, I'm ready, I'm ready. Oh, God, you don't think that the sun will reflect off my head and start a fire?" "I think that's a pretty low risk, Rodney." They took their places for the ceremony, celebrating 20 years in Ilaran time, maybe 19 in their own, of strong and true alliance. It was also a celebration of the 15 years of freedom from the Wraith, and the 12 since the university had been built here, a joint endeavour between the Ilarans and Atlantis, which attracted the best and brightest from all over the galaxy, and even some Earth students. Rodney taught there part-time, ever since he had ceded his CSO duties to a youngster who didn't think anything of the 20-hour days and the crazy amount of bending and stretching and inserting oneself into the bowels of machinery and under tricky consoles that a head of science was obliged to do. Seriously, contortionists had easier lives and they didn't have the extra burden of saving the whole of Atlantis in under 30 seconds with only their expertise in a flat-head screwdriver while their feet were wandering aimlessly about their ears. John had sort of retired as well, though he would never completely give up his role as protector of Atlantis. Rodney had had plenty of moments of terror over that, but he couldn't help but be proud right down to his boots. When the ceremony was over and the speeches had finally dribbled to a halt, John had nudged Rodney sharply halfway through, but he hadn't been asleep, just thinking with his eyes closed. They had mingled and hugged and caught up on the gossip until the sun sank low. "We have reserved a place for you, if you would like to stay here tonight." And Rodney couldn't be certain, but he thought he recognised those older but still mischievous features, that smile and distinctive wink as the door closed and they were left to themselves in a very familiar hut. "Well, we're not wet this time. No need for you to peel me out of my clothes." Rodney looked hopefully at John, though, and was rewarded with a bark of laughter and that heart-melting crinkling around his eyes that Rodney still couldn't believe that he had missed the meaning of for so long. "How about I do it anyway?" And Rodney smiled back and relaxed as John stripped himself and then Rodney with as much care and tenderness and loving amusement as he had that first time when the world changed. The end.
You can find this and other works by Wonky Elk on Archive of Our Own.